Welcome to NACE Clinical Highlights. I'm Dr. Greg Sherman, Chief Medical Officer for NACE. Joining me today for a discussion on migraine management is Dr. Jeff Unger. Jeff is a board-certified family physician and true national thought leader in migraine management. I'm very excited to be able to spend a few minutes with him today to hear his insights and how we can do a better job caring for our patients with migraine, but also to learn about the newer class of drugs, CGRP inhibitors, and when they may be appropriate for our patients with migraine that have failed other conventional therapies. I'm glad you're able to join me today, Jeff. As you and I both know, as primary care clinicians, we're really on the front line of headache management. Yet, often the challenges are making an accurate diagnosis and then treating effectively. It's hard to do sometimes. And certainly, there's newer classes of medications that many of us are still unfamiliar with. But I think the important thing to really understand how to care better for our patients with migraine is to really review how to make an accurate diagnosis, because that can still be challenging. So maybe you can share some of your thoughts on how to really diagnose a patient with migraine.
Well, Greg, thanks for having me. The main thing about all this is that migraine is very common in primary care. This is something that we see even more commonly than diabetes, back pain, and so forth. It's a disabling disorder as well. And the good news for primary care doctors is the majority of patients that are seen in your offices for headache actually have migraine. And we're not talking tension headaches. We're not talking sinus headaches. We're not talking brain tumors or seizures, anything like that. These are pure secondary headaches, which are known as migraine. Now, migraine is simply referred to as a chronic disabling intermittent condition, which means that in between attacks of migraine, patients are just fine. During a migraine, they can't function. And so, like you asked, what's the best way to diagnose migraine? Well, there's three ways we could diagnose it. Very simply, we could do this in less than a minute. First of all, ask if during the last 3 months any of your headaches have been associated with nausea. If they've been nauseated, that's a strike one. The second question is, when you have these headaches over the last 3 months, has light bothered you? This is also known as photophobia. If they say yes, that's strike two. And then the third, and I think the most telling diagnostic clue here, is ask, during these events over the last 3 months of headache, have any of these headaches been disabling? That is, have you been able to go to work with these headaches? Have you been able to go to school? If the answer is no, that's three strikes and you got migraine. That's the best way you can do this. It takes about a minute, and I do it very often in my patients that say they have headaches as a secondary reason they came to see me. I ask, any other questions do you have? Yeah, well, I've got these headaches. Well, do they cause nausea? Have you vomited? Are you disabled from the headaches? And that's how we could establish a good diagnostic parameter on how to make a diagnosis accurately.
So, Jeff, do you need all three of those criteria to feel confident you have a migraine diagnosis, or will two of the three suffice?
Two or three suffices. This is also known as ID migraine. We've used it for years. If you've got two out of three of these positive, Greg, then there's an 87% chance right there that you're dealing with migraine.
One of the common questions we've had in the past when we've ever done any education is evaluation, neuroimaging, lab evaluation, really, I guess, the workup for patient, but most commonly, do you order any scans and do you order any labs?
Well, migraine is a neurological event. There's no structural lesion. So if it's a neurological event, then when you look at your patient, see if you can determine if there is any abnormal neurological finding. If there's any unilateral weakness, that would be a cause of concern. Migraine doesn't cause fever. It doesn't cause neck stiffness, those meningeal signs. But if a patient's just sitting there and saying that, I want to talk to you about my headaches, and I put an S on the end of the term headache, then most likely these people have a primary headache disorder, Greg. However, if the patient is seeing you in urgent care in the emergency room for a, quote, headache, just one headache, worst headache of my life, first and worst, then I'd be a little bit more concerned about that. But the American Neurological Society does not recommend doing scanning on patients who you feel have migraines. Every once in a while, you have a patient that has a normal neurological exam. You diagnose them as migraine. They get into a car accident for whatever reason. Somebody scans their head, and they have a lesion. This occurs in 0.2% of all patients with migraine, but the incidence is very rare. And usually what you're looking at in the scan has absolutely nothing to do with their headaches.
So do you think that there's an age break-off or cutoff above which you would say, I still probably need to image? In a young person that presents, I might not worry about it. But if someone who's presenting in their 50s with symptoms that sound like migraine and no other neurological findings, is the fact that they're older still enough to say we should probably image them, or same criteria apply?
Great question for primary care, because if you have a child with headaches under age 5, we always get concerned about that. But the first thing that a parent would want to know when they bring their kid in for an evaluation of headaches or a headache is, does my child have a brain tumor? So what you'll do is you look at the pattern of migraine in these patients. If the headache, again, is intermittent and in between times they're doing just fine, then this most likely is a migraine. And also you got to get the family history as well, because migraine is genetic. There's got to be somebody in the family that has migraines. However, if the pattern of the headache is progressive, like every day or every week is worse than the week before, then you really need to start thinking about some type of structural lesion in people under age 5. And then for people over age 55, you also have to start thinking of any type of secondary headache disorder. Now, one of the things we look at is giant cell arteritis. And for these patients, they have tenderness in the forehead and the shoulders, and they have also a positive SED rate. But in between those age ranges of 5 to 55, there's really no need to image people that have normal vital signs and normal neurological evaluation.
I think those are good guidelines to think about, and hopefully will give some confidence to our colleagues that are listening that they can go with their assessment for those patients that lie in between those age groups. I want to let our listeners know that you can access additional educational content on our website, naceonline.com. There you can access many programs we've developed on other topics to help you care for your patients. You can also register for one or more of the live and virtual conferences that we produce every single year. If you're on Facebook, please like us, and we'll be able to share more educational content and information with you. Jeff, let's say we've made the diagnosis, and we're treating a patient with maybe a triptan, and they're having some benefit, but those headaches are becoming more frequent. Talk to us about prophylaxis, when we really should be considering initiating daily prophylactic therapy for these patients.
Yeah, Greg, this is something that I think we need to really look at in primary care, because less than 40% of all patients with frequent migraine are given therapies or introduced to therapies that can potentially reduce the frequency of the migraine. So first of all, why even consider prophylaxis? And the answer is that migraine, again, is a neurological event, and there's a process called kindling. That means the more migraines you experience, the more likely you are to have migraines moving forward. So in between these migraine events, the brain has a chance to recover from that situation. The more frequently these headaches occur, the less likely the brain is able to recover, and these headaches just go on and on and on. So there's some rules of thumb. From the guidelines, we know that if a patient has headaches more than 4 times a month, then we need to offer them some type of preventative therapy. On the other hand, this is all individualized, because there's different types of migraine. One of them is migraine with aura, where a patient can actually lose their vision for a period of time, usually 15 to 30 minutes, even before the headache occurs. So if you've got a mom driving on the road who loses their vision, this could be very problematic. Therefore, we tend to give prophylactic medicines to patients that do have any type of visual disturbance associated with their headaches. And the other thing is, imagine this. You've got a brain surgeon that's cutting on your head, cutting on your brain, who has a migraine with aura once every 3 months. Well, you don't want to be that patient. So if it's an individual case, this needs to be considered, and we need to use some type of prophylaxis. And I think the most famous case, Greg, of migraine prophylaxis, some of you may remember a few years ago when the Denver Broncos won the Super Bowl. Well, they have a running back. His name is Terrell Davis, and he had severe headaches. and get into the Super Bowl, he was having more and more headaches. Well, somebody came up with the idea of putting him on preventative therapy, and guess what? No headaches, and the Broncos won. So it's all individualized, but the bottom line is anybody having more than four headaches a month should be given preventative therapy.
Do you have a sense of established therapies as a first line? What kind of choices have the best data behind them?
Yeah, so it's interesting that the drugs that we're familiar with in primary care, like topiramate, valproic acid, these drugs were never designed initially for migraine prevention. Turns out they work. They work fairly well, but they're very nonspecific. And they also have more side effects. So with topiramate, you could have memory loss, you could have weight loss, you could have paresthesias, even an increased risk of glaucoma and kidney stones. With valproic acid, everybody that's on valproic acid knows their hair's going to fall out, they're going to gain weight, and they're going to have really bad heartburn. So if you're looking at long-term preventative care, you want to choose a medication that is going to be very effective in the long run and also have minimal side effects. It takes, Greg, usually anywhere between 2 weeks and 6 weeks before these preventative therapies work. And they're very nonspecific in regards to targeting migraineurs related to prevention. So we have some newer medications out now that are specifically indicated for episodic and chronic migraine.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about it. I know you're referring to CGRP inhibitors. It's been really astounding to see some of the data coming out. It's the first time we have a new drug for migraine in a long time. So why don't you share with our listeners how to, understand how these drugs work and when they're appropriate?
All right. The best way to understand this, and I do explain this to my patient, migraineurs have a very sensitive nervous system. Anybody that has a migraine headache knows that there are certain triggers that turn on the headache. So these triggers are specific to the individual migraineur. It could be bright lights. It could be loud noise. It could be lack of sleep. It could be too much food and not the right food and so forth. It could be alcohol. It could be smoking, whatever it is. So whenever there's a trigger, there's a expression in the brain of something called CGRP, calcitonin G-related peptide. This is produced from the trigeminal nerve. Once this is released from the trigeminal nerve, it lands on a receptor called a CGRP receptor. Once you bind CGRP to receptor, guess what? You get pain. So the scientists in the migraine community have come up with CGRP blockers. And there's two types of these. One of them, one of these blockers prevents the binding of the CGRP to the CGRP receptor. If you don't bind the receptor, you don't get a headache. And the other way to do this is use a monoclonal antibody which binds directly to the CGRP molecule, and it prevents the binding to the receptor. These are called ligands. So we've got now three of these drugs available, Greg, and they all work extremely well for both episodic and chronic migraine. It really has revolutionized. These drugs have really revolutionized the way we manage patients with migraine in the office today.
Jeff, are there any precautions across the class of drugs that our primary care colleagues who may not be as familiar with these drugs should be aware of if they're going to start prescribing them in terms of side effects or requirements that they need to counsel their patients on?
Yeah, and these drugs are extremely safe. They're injected by the patient once a month or once every 3 months, depending on the type of drug that you use. But the amazing thing about these drugs, and I'm not the only one that says this, the FDA also says the most common types of reactions you get are injection site reactions, which is not a big deal. And the other thing is, in one of the drugs, you can get problems with constipation. But that's really good comparing the CGRP class in general to the types of drugs that we now use for preventative care. So the other thing that happens with these drugs is that the efficacy occurs within 1 week of starting the drugs. And so you see a decline in headache frequency of up to 5 days per month in patients using CGRP versus placebo. Now, you may not think, Greg, that 5 days a month is a big deal. However, remember, these are disabling headaches. And if you take a whole year into consideration, that's 5 times 12, that's 60 days where the patient is not affected by migraine. In my mind, and in the minds of patients that have migraine as well, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, that sounds great. So I'm not sure if this would be a personal recommendation or if there are guidelines yet, but for our colleagues that are listening and think this is a great option for patients they may be seeing, is there a recommendation that this should be our first-line prophylactic recommendation for our patients, or is it still second-line or third-line therapy amongst older medications that have been out and we may have been utilizing, including beta blockers or topiramate or valproic acid, as you mentioned?
It's a great thought. And first of all, the older therapies are much cheaper. The drugs that I'm talking about can cost up to $5,000 a year. However, Greg, I got to tell you, the drugs are essentially free at this point in time for the next year or two. All you got to do is use a coupon, and these drugs are provided free of charge. Having said that, the guidelines still state that maybe we should try any type of anti-epileptic drug or a beta blocker, whatever you want to do first. If there's a failure on that, go to the CGRP. Having said that, most headache specialists will go directly to the CGRP inhibitor or the ligand, and the reason is very simple. Patients get better in a week. So if patients get better in a week, they're happy. They'll send us more patients, but mm-hmm. The same thing, we'll put them on more CGRPs. It's just, it's very, very beneficial for the patient to not be disabled during these events. And that's why right from the start now, even on day one, we'll inject CGRP in the office, show them how to do it, and begin therapy. I don't typically use the other drugs at this point in time. And this is a paradigm shift in how we manage migraine over the last 12 months or so.
So are there any contraindications that colleagues need to be aware of in terms of patient age or comorbidity?
No, these drugs the contraindication is that they have not been approved for children under age 18. As far as elderly patients, there's limited data over age 65. The other thing is that these drugs have been tested in patients with known coronary artery disease. There does not seem to be any contraindication for using the drug in those situations. So I would say that these drugs are very not only safe, they're very effective. They are expensive, but the coupons cover the cost at least over the next year. And they really, really do work in the vast majority of patients. Some patients, Greg, even get 100% efficacy of the drug, which means that the migraines stop. My wife is one of these, and you know her. And if she doesn't complain about migraines, that's a good thing for me.
Yes, I'm sure it is. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me and share your expertise on caring for our patients with migraine. I think it really is an exciting time. We have some great new options for our patients and hopefully can really make a difference in their lives, because this is really, it's a tough illness when it's not controlled.
Absolutely.
So thanks so much.
Thank you very much for your time too, Greg, and the opportunity to teach our peers about how to effectively manage migraine.
If you're interested in educational opportunities, go to our website at naceonline.com and register for our enduring activities. Please like us on Facebook at NACE-CME to be part of our online social media community and get access to other content and programs we share. I want to thank you, our audience, for joining us on this episode of NACE Clinical Highlights. Stay tuned for more episodes as we continue to record interviews with our faculty on a regular basis. Thanks so much for being part of this program.